Hello, everyone. We are continuing on with Thomas Manton, an exposition with notes upon the Epistle of Jude. Last time we finished verse 9, yet Michael the archangel, when contending with the devil, he disputed about the body of Moses, durst not bring against him a railing accusation, but said, the Lord rebuke thee. And Lord willing, we're going to go on to verse 10 here, and I'll go ahead and start. Verse 10. But these speak evil of the things which they know not, but what they know naturally, as brute beasts, in those things they corrupt themselves. In this verse, he shows the disproportion between them and the archangel. He was modest in a known and good cause, but these are contemptuous and given to railing in matters of which they are wholly or fully ignorant. Two faults are charged upon them in this verse. Number one, pride in condemning things without knowledge, and two, wickedness in abusing the knowledge they had. So then he goes through the words of the verse, but these, the seducers spoken of in the context, speak evil or take that liberty to belch out their reproaches of the things they know not. What are those things? Some say the dignities before spoken of, others, the mysteries of the Christian faith. For the former opinion, that clause may be alleged in verse 8, speaking evil of dignities. And so it will imply that they were ignorant of the nature of angels with whom they pretended so great a familiarity as to know their courses, services, and conjugations. Or else of the nature of church ordinances, they taking upon them to speak so reproachfully of the offices which God has set in the church, or of the nature of civil power and magistracy, they allowing themselves in such intemperate language. But for the latter opinion, the universal particle in the text, whatsoever things they know not, so Peter's phrase is general, 2 Peter 2, verse 12, but these as natural brute beasts, made to be taken and destroyed, speak evil of the things they understand not. The scope of both these apostles being to set out these deceivers as ignorant and brutish sensualists, ones that focus on their senses, and yet under a pretense of great and more curious knowledge than others had, wherefore they were called Gnostics. For my part, I shall interpret the clause generally of the ignorance in all truly spiritual matters, which was bewrayed in that they did deliver their sense in matter of magistracy and church ministries with some impudence and reproach. The next words, but what they know naturally as brute beasts in those things they corrupt themselves. Before I come more particularly to open the words, let me tell you there is some difference about that clause as brute beasts. To what part of the sentence is it to be referred? If to the former part, you have thus, what they know naturally as brute beasts, then the sense will be that knowledge which they have in common with brute beasts, or with the beasts. Man is in part an angel and part a beast. In his reason and the upper part of the soul, he resembles an angel, and in his appetite and senses, a beast. What they know by their senses and brutish desires, that will be the sense, if you allow, of the first reference. If to the latter part you have thus, in those things as brute beasts they corrupt themselves, then it will suit with the parallel place in 2 Peter 2, verse 12, as natural brute beasts made to be taken and destroyed, and it will imply that they degenerated into beasts, notwithstanding that natural knowledge wherewith they were endowed. But to speak my own thoughts in this matter, the former reading is more agreeable to the posture of the words in the original, what they naturally as brute beasts know. In those things they are worse than beasts, corrupting and defiling themselves by the excesses of the sensual appetite, or the appetites of the senses, as in eating and drinking, and the use of the woman in common copulation, as if there were no law, nor limited use of those things, which yet they might discern in the beasts themselves and the dictates of their own consciences. This being premised, I come to explain the words, what they know naturally. There is a threefold light. One, sense or instinct. Number two, reason. And number three, grace. And accordingly, as a man is furnished, he may be said to be spiritual or furnished with the light of grace or natural, 1 Corinthians 2:14. It signifies one that has nothing but the light of a reasonable soul. Lastly, merely natural, which signifies one guided by the blind emotion of instinct of nature without reason, counsel, and choice, as the beasts are. So it is said here, what they know naturally, that is, what they understand by natural inclination, or their mere judgment or perception of sense to be good or evil, in those things they corrupt themselves or are corrupted. So Erasmus, but the word is not simply passive, but after the form of the conjugation among the Hebrews, which implies such a passion as we cause to ourselves. But how do they corrupt themselves? Sinfully or penally? As with a penalty. I answer both ways. Sinfully, they corrupt and defile themselves, and so draw down punishments both upon their souls and bodies. 2 Peter 2, verse 12. And they perish in their own corruption. Observation number one. Having made this way, I come to the observations, and in the first place observe that truth is usually slandered out of ignorance. Because men do not understand the ways and things of God, therefore they do condemn them. In the apostles' days, the doctrine of the cross was accounted foolishness by those that knew least of it. And afterwards, the Christian religion was condemned because it could not be heard. But when they knew it, they could not hate it. It is the devil's cunning to keep us at a distance from truths and therefore burden them with prejudices that we may suspect rather than search and condemn that out of ignorance and upon vulgar clamor, which upon knowledge we could not choose but love and protest or profess. And it is man's perverseness and pride to speak evil of things above his reach, and to disprove that which he has not attained unto or cannot understand. Nazianzen speaks of some ignorant people that condemned learning because they had not the happiness to attain to it, that their own deficiency being the more common might be less odious. Or to instance in a higher case, papists and carnal men scoff at imputed righteousness, assurance of salvation, and the testimony of the Spirit, because they are things that are utterly unacquainted with. Well then, when we declaim against things, we should speak out of advised knowledge, not rash zeal. See John 3:11, we speak that which we know and testify that which we have seen. Zeal, as it must have a right aim or purpose or goal, so a solid ground to proceed upon. It is a vain thing to begin at the affections and to hate before we know. Proverbs 18:13, he that answereth a matter before he heareth it, it is a folly and a shame to him. If you light right, it is but a happy mistake and stumble. When the affections outsmart the judgment, men grow obstinate in their ignorance and will not know what they have a mind to hate. Rash prejudices engaging men in opposition, they will not own the truth when represented to them. Having hated it without knowledge, they hate it against knowledge, and so are hardened against the ways of God, which is the case of many who in a blind zeal have appeared against the public ministry and ordinances, and being engaged are loath to strike sail and lay down their defiance when sufficient conviction is offered. Observation two, observe again, blockish and stupid, and usually stupid is like in a stupor, blockish and stupid men are most bold in reproaching. A fool's wrath falls very heavy because it falls with all its weight, there being nothing to restrain and stop it. Proverbs 27 verse 3, a stone is heavy and sand is weighty, but a fool's wrath is heavier than them both. When the mind is void of judgment, it is more overcome and carried out of the way of a naughty, or carried in the way of a naughty passion. Usually we find it the weakest spirits are most violent, there being nothing of judgment to counterbalance affection. Men are all flame and rage. Liquors, when they run low and are upon the dregs, they grow more tart and sour. So it is usually with the dregs of men, for when they are weak and run low in parts, or run in low parts, their opposition is most troublesome. What ado in the ministry have we with young heady professors of religion that have more heat than light? And how troublesome are those wild sectaries that have only knowledge enough to prate a little against the undoubted ordinances of Jesus Christ. For there being nothing of knowledge and civility to restrain them, they easily give vent to the excesses of their passions by clamor and evil speaking. Observation number 3, from the second part of the charge, observe that men of corrupt minds are usually sensual or run by their senses, and sensual men are usually men of corrupt minds. An unsound heart is best sheltered under unsound doctrine, and carnal delights blunt and weaken the edge and intention of the mind so that they are very liable to mistakes. Carnal delights being those that are just of nature of the natural man and probably corrupt desires of the heart. Therefore, on the one side, we should labor to keep the mind right and sound in the faith. Fish stink first at the head. When the judgment is poisoned, the taint is soon conveyed to the affections. Now on the other side, add to your knowledge temperance. 2 Peter 1 verse 6. The apostle joins these because many times men of the greatest parts or abilities are overcome by appetite. And some say that temper of body which is fit for wit and scholarship is much inclined this way. Solomon, so famous for wisdom and knowledge, was enticed by women. Oh, let not fleshly lusts betray you. Again, those can be sexual, but again, even just corrupt desires of the hearts toward things of your senses. That is the best knowledge that ends in temperance or begets a holy moderation in the use of sensual, again, of the senses, pleasure. If we cannot govern our affections, we know nothing as we ought to know. Nay, otherwise, your knowledge will be corrupted by your affections. Many errors take their rise and beginning from evil manners and filthy lusts. Observation 4. Observe again that wicked men, left to themselves, do but abuse and corrupt that natural goodness and knowledge which they have in them. Natural abilities are soon depraved with evil habits. He that had but one talent is called a wicked and slothful servant, Matthew 25, verse 26, slothful for not growing better and wicked for growing worse. Naturally, we are blind and we cannot endure to be enlightened, 2 Peter 3, verse 5. Yea, rather, we put the finger in nature's eye, and then there comes on judicial blindness, Romans 1:28. We suffer lusts, again corrupt desires of the hearts, to blow out the candle of reason, and then we are justly left to the power of vile affections. Certainly they do not flatter us that say there is a power in nature as to conversion and turning to God. We are so far from improving ourselves that we corrupt ourselves in what we know naturally, and suffer brutish lusts to blind the mind and harden the heart. Observation 5, once more observe, sin where it reigns turns a man into a brute beast. Psalm 49 verse 12, man being in honor abideth not, he is like the beasts that perish. The meaning is, he abode not in the honor of his creation, hence compared to wolves for their cruelty, dogs for their filthiness, to horses and mules for the rage of lust, to a wild ass's colt for wildness and dullness of understanding. See Jeremiah 5:8, Ezekiel 20, verse 23, Job 11, verse 12, Revelation 22, verse 15. You may see here to what sin will bring you. With Nebuchadnezzar, we outgrow the heart of a man. What he did through that deep melancholy that fell upon him by God's judgment, Daniel 4:32, we do spiritually. If we had the head of a horse or the face of a swine or the hoofs of an ass, how should we be looked upon as monsters? But to have the hearts of the beasts is worse. To be like them in the inward man is more monstrous in the sight of God. Consider this. Sin makes a beast of you. Nay, it makes you worse than the beasts. The ass knoweth his owner, etc. Isaiah 1 verse 3. They are serviceable to their benefactors, but you are a rebel against God that made you and has kept you all your days. The sluggard is put to school by the ant, Proverbs 6. The beasts know their stint and measure. A horse or a dog will not be drunk, etc. Shall I speak one word more? Sin does not only make a beast of you, but a devil of you. John 6, verse 70, one of you is a devil. The devils said, what have we to do with thee, Jesus, thou son of David? And wicked men, what is the Almighty? Depart from us, we desire not the knowledge of thy ways. Observation number 6. Again, observe, it is a sign of a man turned beast to follow the passions and lusts of corrupt nature. Again, those can just be those corrupt desires. Why? For then the government of reason is renounced, and all is yielded up into the hands of lust and appetite, or corrupt desires. In men, reason should have the chief governance and exercise a coercion and restraint over our affections. But now, when we yield up ourselves to the passionateness of lust and are transported with violence of it, it answers to that rage which reigns in the beasts. I shall take occasion here to show you how many ways a man turns beast. Number 1, by an addictedness to sensual pleasures and delights, or those that just please the senses. Doesn't have to be sexual. It can be, but doesn't have to be. It is the beast's happiness to enjoy pleasures without remorse. They have no conscience. They are not called to an account, etc. Now, he is not worthy the name of a man, said Tully, that would willingly spend one whole day in pleasure. We may take pleasures sometimes, but they should not take us. That is, we should not be vehemently addicted to them. Number 2, when in the use of these delights, we keep neither modesty nor measure. This is but like swine to wallow in our own filthiness. A beast can do no more. Nay, many a beast would not do so much. Number 3, when men live by appetite rather than reason and conscience, feeding without fear and nourishing the body, but taking no care to refresh the soul. This should humble many that think highly of themselves. They do but carry a beast's heart under a man's shape. While they are wholly or fully given up to sensual delight, pampering the body, when in the meantime the precious but neglected soul may justly complain of hard usage. In observation 7, in the last place, observe that sensuality does but make way for corruption. Again, it doesn't have to be sexual. It can just be running by your senses. It does make way for corruption. You may counterpoise the temptation to the sin with the punishment. Usually, secret sins and sweet sins meet with a heavy punishment. Secret sins that do not betray us to shame may yet beget horror when we think of what will ensue. And sweet sins that entice our affections, to prevent them, we may counterbalance one affection with another, delight with fear. Well then, to check the brutish rage of sensual inclinations, say, this will tend to my corruption and perishing forever. They that sow to the flesh shall reap corruption, Galatians 6, verse 8. Carnal pleasures, or those that please the senses, turn to an ill account in the issue. So Romans 8:13, if ye live after the flesh, ye shall die. The Lord fenced Eden with a flaming sword. So is the garden of carnal delights fenced with the wrath of God. We run a great hazard to enter in. Say then, shall I, for a superfluous cup, adventure to drink a cup of wrath unmixed? For pleasures here, forfeit the pleasures at God's right hand forevermore? For a little wanton dalliance, lose the embraces of Christ when he comes out to receive the saints to himself at the last day? God forbid. All right, that is the end of verse 10. And Lord willing, we will continue next time. But until then, go living after the Spirit and not after the carnal man in an abusive way or beyond what is prescribed by God in his word and according to his glory. And Lord willing, we will talk to you again soon.